Thank you, Brian, for leading us in those songs. And I want to just say how grateful Vicki and I are for all the notes and words of encouragement on the birth of our first grandchild. Why didn't you guys tell me how good it was? I know some of you grandparents were telling us that, and it's every bit of that and more. And we were finally so grateful to be able to have a name because they waited a whole week before they chose a name. And apparently wanted to pick a name that no other boy would have in school. And so they chose the name Rhett Oscar. And so I just have to explain to everyone, it's Rhett as in Butler and Oscar as in Meyer. And so that's how you can remember that name. So anyway, we've got an unusually named grandson that nobody else will pick, hopefully. We are grateful for a lot of reasons to be part of this congregation. I speak for Vicki and I and for many of you who've been part of this church family for years. And there are many wonderful couples who have modeled marriage successfully through those years. I know that not everyone who goes through a divorce does so by their own choosing. There are many faithful Christians that I know, both men and women, who have fought tenaciously to hold their marriages together to no avail. There are those who have been parted from their union through death. We have marriages here that are blended marriages. We have second go-around marriages. And you know, one thing that the Lord said at the very beginning, it's not good for man to be alone. And so it's wonderful to see that happen. But I just admire the couples who have persevered through difficulty and through hard times and through good times and who have made their marriages work. And one thing that our elders have said this year that they're really working on, they said last October at our retreat, we want to make a commitment to our couples in this church family to help them strengthen their marriages. Vinton Haskins met with a group of couples just this evening, talked about a marriage mentoring program that we're hoping to get started. We've got this couples banquet coming up in the next May. Jerry and Lynn Jones, who are going to be speaking at the couples banquet, will be back for a full-blown seminar that will run from Monday through Wednesday that is apparently just a fantastic seminar entitled Marriage Matters. And we hope a lot of couples will be involved in that. So we're doing things, and we want to do more things to help encourage couples to have strong marriages. So tonight I want us to look at that. The passage was read for you at the very beginning by Tim from Ephesians that compares the relationship that Jesus has with his church with that of the relationship of a husband and wife, and the admonition for husbands to love their wives and for wives to respect their husbands. And then it compares that deep relationship of sacrificial love for the church. And that's the way husbands are to view their wives. And so we see that beautiful picture that's described there. And so this evening, I want to go to God's Word to find direction for building marriages that are strong, lasting marriages. And I was helped by coming across some material by David Jeremiah, and he's done a lot of work on marriages, and I was just so encouraged by that, and so I want to acknowledge some of his material in putting together my thoughts for tonight. The strength and the endurance of any structure is based on more than just what you see. And if you see a marriage, and we've got marriages here that have gone on well beyond the 50-year number, and when you see a strong marriage, it's more than just what you see on the surface. Beneath the towering skyscrapers there on Manhattan, that new tallest building in North America that's being completed right now, There are foundations that go down deep, all the way down to the bedrock. And so there's so much more beneath the surface that you don't even notice at all. And it's always that way in every successful marriage. Those marriages which succeed for several reasons. And I want to just enumerate three or four of those reasons that allow marriages to be successful. Number one, they are built on a solid foundation. You know what the second most important decision is that you will ever make in all of your life? I think most of you maybe know this. You know what the first decision is? The first decision, most important decision that anyone will ever make is your decision about Jesus. That's number one. That decision determines your eternity. The second most important decision that you will ever make is who you're going to spend this life on earth with as a partner, the person that you will marry. Now, your life will be either filled with joy or possibly with misery. Your life will be a life of peace or possibly a life of torment, depending upon that person. Now, let me throw in another little qualifier here. It is not necessary to be married to have a happy life. Tony Gentry preached the best sermon on this subject that I ever heard, and he spent many years, he was up in his 30s before he ever got married, and he'd wrestled with this whole topic. And he had come to the point where he had considered the reality that he might go through life as a single. And he talked about that. And he said, you know, sometimes we put so much pressure on people to get married if they're not married. And you don't have to be married to be happy. God can bless you and give you a very rich and fulfilling life without being married. So we need to say that at the outset. But in marriage, the person you choose will largely determine how happy a ride you have in the years that are spent on this earth. The selection process is vitally important. So to all of you who are single here tonight, who might someday be tempted to get married, let me just remind you, in Amos chapter 3 and verse 3, that prophet said, or asked the question, do two walk together unless they have agreed to do so? Paul wrote to the Corinthian church and warned them about close associations with people who do not share your faith. And he warned against that. It's so critical in a relationship that at the foundation is a commitment to Jesus Christ. And in counseling, I often draw a little triangle. And I will talk to couples and I'll say, you know, when you begin to drift apart, what you need more than anything is to have Jesus at the core of your home. Because if Jesus is at the pinnacle of that pyramid, the closer you get to Him, the closer you're going to get to your partner. The further you drift from Jesus, the further apart you tend to drift in your own marriage. And so keeping your marriage centered on your faith, on your commitment to Jesus Christ, is the critical component with which marriages need to begin. And I've said this over and over, and I'll keep saying it as long as I have breath in me. To young people, do not share your life. Do not plan to get married to someone who does not share your commitment to Jesus Christ. That is so critically important. And I've heard someone say, if a child of God marries a child of the devil, then he's going to have trouble with his in-laws. And that's true, and that happens. You say, you know what, I know a lot of couples who didn't start out being married to a Christian and everything worked out just fine. Well, I would have to agree with you. I know that that's happened too. My parents are a case in point. And I remember as a young boy seeing my dad being baptized into Christ. And it worked out beautifully. But for every case where a Christian marries a non-Christian and it works out just fine, I can show you 10 examples of it not working out well at all. And there's nothing more difficult than to have one parent shouldering the entire responsibility for the spiritual needs of a family and for children. So that's just a critical component. And so, starting off, build your foundation on a common shared spiritual direction. Secondly, those marriages succeed whose expectations are not too high. I see couples today that spend fortunes on weddings, and their expectations are just as high as the price of their wedding of what this marriage is going to do for them, and they have this idealistic dream. I don't know whether it comes from movies or romance novels or where they get this notion, but believing that somehow if I can just find my Prince Charming, or if I can find my princess or my beauty, that if we get together, life is going to be so perfect and so good, and my needs will be met, and I will be loved, and I'll be able to love, and everything will just be wonderful. And guys, it doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. Marriage is a wonderful thing, but marriage cannot meet all of life's expectations. Marriage is not even designed to meet all of life's expectations. There's a little verse in Romans chapter 3 and verse 23 that you need to remember on your wedding day. And that verse says, "All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." Anybody that gets married is marrying someone who has fallen short of the glory of God. And they're going to keep falling short of the glory of God. And they're going to fall short of your expectations. If they fall short of God's expectations, they'll fall short of yours. And so you're going to have problems, and you're going to be dealing with someone who is less than perfect, less than ideal. The only thing that can meet your deepest need is Jesus Christ, not marriage. Now, marriage is wonderful, but only Jesus can meet that deeper need of the heart. And so don't look for marriage to be a cure-all or the ultimate experience. That happens only in the spiritual realm in our relationship with Jesus Christ. Nothing that is created is eternal. Marriage is not eternal. And again, I hear couples saying, you know, we're going to be together for all of eternity. Now, that may be true if you're Christians. But marriage and that marriage bond does not even last for all of eternity. Everything that I can see, touch, taste will be destroyed in the end. And that includes marriage. Jesus clearly says as much in Mark chapter 12. He says, "When the dead rise, they will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels." And I've talked with Vicki about this, and I've said, well, you know, we're still going to be together. We're going to be, we will have shared all we've shared on this earth, and we'll be together in heaven. And if it's not in a marriage relationship, it's going to be something even better than that. And so life will go on, but marriage is not designed to be eternal. Now, that may make some of you sad. Others are probably saying, "Lord, come quickly." But only our relationship with God is one that is eternal and that will endure. Thirdly, marriages last that are regularly maintained. And I see this. And I talk to couples whose marriages are on the rocks. And it is predictable. When you ask them the maintenance-related questions, you'll find out in a hurry that very little maintenance has been done over a lengthy period of time. I was encouraged looking at Facebook at the Penner's trip to Branson, and they had pictures, and John talked about how wonderful it was being with his wife, and I talked to him this morning, and I said, "What'd you do with the kids?" And they explained to me how they were taken care of, and they just got off and got away for a while and renewed their relationship. And every single marriage needs that. We all need that renewal in our relationship because everything wears out. Everything wears out unless you keep it in repair. If you did as little to maintain your marriage, if you did as little to maintain your house as you do to maintain your marriage, what would your house look like? If you did as little to maintain your car as you do time spent in your marriage, what would your car look like? You know, marriage is more important than any car we've ever driven or any house that we'll ever live in. And we must constantly be working on that. There are time pressures, there are children pressures, there's illness, all the things that take their toll on our marriages. And so if a marriage lasts, it's going to be because we talk together. We do the things we did at the beginning of that relationship. We play together. We pray together. We work together. We grow together. We worship together. All these things allow a marriage to maintain that richness and that harmony that without that kind of maintenance, it will just fall into decay. And then lastly, I just want to mention this. Marriages that last are filled with mutual encouragement. And again, it's almost predictable when you're around couples. It doesn't take long to hear the way couples talk to each other and talk about each other to know which way that relationship is headed. None of us can make it through life without encouraging words. And in most marriages, now there may be exceptions to this, mine's certainly not one, in most marriages, what your spouse thinks about you and says to you is more important than what anybody else has to say. I still need Vicki, after all these years of preaching, I still need Vicki to tell me how my sermon was. Now, you'd think I wouldn't need that, but I do. And if she doesn't volunteer it, I'll usually ask her sometime on Sunday at lunch, well, how'd you think that sermon was? And I need her encouragement, and I need her constructive criticism. And we need that as couples and in our relationships. We all need those encouraging words. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, Paul wrote, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." Now, I don't have to tell you that there are couples who do not offer encouraging words to one another. And they may do it in a joking way, and a little bit of that's okay. I mean, you can do a little bit of trash talk and just have fun doing that. But there are couples that offer serious, hard-hearted put-downs. And they slice each other. And they do it in public. And I've heard couples talk like this to each other, and it just makes me cringe to hear the kind of put-downs that are said in that way. They're damaging to the self-esteem of those couples. God says in our relationships, and this has got to go double for marriage, build each other up. Do things and say things that will lift your partner and encourage your partner. And that's done through compliments. Husbands, compliment your wife. And if you want to score double, compliment your wife in front of others. And brag on her to others. And tell people what a great wife she is. And it goes the other way too. Wives, you know how to build your husband up? You brag on him. And brag on him to other people. And let him know how much you love him and how proud you are to be his wife. Men may not act like they need that, but they do. They need this kind of building with their self-esteem. There was a couple that Vicki and I knew years back, back in Texas. And she was one that just was always building her husband up. And consequently, we loved being around them. Don't you like being around couples that are positive and complimentary and encouraging to each other? I love that. And I don't like being around the other kind that are always, you know, trashing each other. But this couple, he was a preacher, and he told his repertoire of stories. Now, have you ever known someone that repeated their stories? Tell the same stories over and over again. We'd been around this couple long enough that I had heard most of his stories at least two or three times. And any time a new group was there, she would say, "Oh, tell them about the time that you did this or that." And here he'd go telling that same old story again. And one time we just asked her, and she would laugh. She just would die laughing. She loved those stories. And I just said to her, I said, Gene, I said, how can you listen to those stories? You must have heard those stories 100 times. She said, I just love how he tells them, you know. And he just sat there and glowed. And you just think, boy, what a fortunate husband to have a wife like that who built him up and who encouraged him in that way. You know who I like best? I like people who like me and who love me and who encourage me. And that is so true in a marriage. When those who love us act like they like us and build us up, that really fosters a marriage that is healthy and strong. So I just want to say to all of us as couples in this congregation, these are just some ways we can work on our marriages. We're going to have opportunities in the days and weeks ahead and early next year to really build our marriages and make them stronger. And my prayer is, and I know the prayer of the elders in this church, are that we will never again have a bombshell dropped on us about, did you hear about this couple? They're getting a divorce. That is the worst news possible. And we certainly don't want that to happen within this church family. We want strong marriages that are growing and healthy and that are well maintained. The wonder is, in the world we live in today, that there aren't more divorces than there are. I'm grateful for the examples in this church and for the many strong marriages that exist. So tonight, we're going to close with our invitation. And if anyone here needs prayer in any area of their life, including their marriage, if you know someone who needs prayers in their marriage, I hope you'll take advantage of what we have here with our prayer cards and let us pray for couples that need strengthening. If tonight there might be someone in this crowd that's never taken that initial step of obedience, we would hope that if that's your need, that you'll express it tonight. If you need to come, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.